All right, we'll bring the Sunset Advisory Commission meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. We have a good agenda today, some important things to get done, so looking forward to doing that. And just again to mention that all the meetings, including the first one, are being taped and following protocol as far as taking minutes and recording of meetings and so on and so forth. So just want to let everybody in the room know that. Okay, our first item on the agenda today is election of officers. Representative Pepin?
I would like to make a motion.
Please proceed, Representative Pepin.
I will move that Representative Mary Kiffmeyer serve as chair and Senator Terry Bonoff serve as vice chair.
All right, any other nominations? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and is adopted. Thank you very much. And with that, we are now organized and very grateful for that brand new Sunset Advisory Commission. So getting her going. Next item is to approve the minutes of the November 21st, 2011 meeting. They are in your packet, rather brief. And when someone is ready, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Mr. Intenta moves adoption of the minutes. Any changes, corrections, any other suggestions? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is to review and approve the proposed rules. These are draft rules prepared by staff. And Mr. Hubinger, would you just give us a little bit of a background about these rules?
A little bit about your...
Madam Chair and members, the draft rules are pretty standard fare for the legislature, but I'll go through some of the highlights. Item 2.0 provides for the commission to elect the chair and vice chair. Their terms continue through January 7th of 2003. Item 3.1 provides for the commission, as far as practicable, giving 3 days' notice of all meetings, which is the standard procedure in the legislature. Item 5.0 deals with quorums and is directly from the statute that established the commission. It provides for a quorum consisting of 7 members and requires that any final action or recommendation only be made if it's been approved by a recorded vote of at least 7 members. Item 6.0 provides for the agenda and work of this group. It provides substantively that the chair and the vice chair concur on each item for the agenda and on the work plan for the commission's review of agencies and the development of the commission's recommendations. On the backside is a provision that requires that for these rules to be amended or suspended, that a vote of 7 members is required.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. And Mr. Shepherd, would you address the issue of line 3.1? As far as practicable, as far as 3 days' notice, would you give us a little bit of background on that?
Chair and members, I think the word practicable it's been defined in 2 different ways in different contexts. One, in one sense, it means practical, when it can be done. And in another sense, for example, in the redistricting world, there's cases that say as nearly as practicable something happens, and it means to the greatest extent possible. So I think in this world of this commission, those as a practical matter, there are going to have very similar meanings, that the commission, as much as it can, will always give 3 days' notice.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. Anybody else? With that, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the proposed rules as presented.
So moved.
So moved. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and is adopted. All right. Next item on the agenda is a report from our staff on the comparison of Texas reporting requirements to Minnesota's reporting requirements as in current statute.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, for the record,
make sure that the agenda before everybody, there are some things added to the agenda that was not pre-approved that we may or may not get to depending on time prevails. I didn't want it to be understood that for this meeting, not each thing was agreed to as a matter of concurrence.
And I appreciate your mentioning that. What Mr. Hubinger did was just to enable us to prepare for the future, he made a request to the boards that they might just put together a little something that would give an overview of the boards. And I appreciate his initiative and thoughtfulness at doing that. But the understanding is if we have time to get to that, we will. And if we don't have time, it's not an urgent thing to this agenda, but if we could get to it, it might help us all to have a nice oversight to that. And he brought that up this morning to me, and I appreciate his thoughtfulness that way. But it's that if we wish to and have time to do it, we will. And
very good.
All right? Good. Thank you. Mr. Hubinger, would you go ahead on that comparison?
Madam Chair, Ms. James from the Senate is going to provide that.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, at our last meeting, Ms. Erickson-Ropes asked how the criteria for review in the Minnesota statute, 3D.10, compares with the Texas criteria for review. And so we performed that comparison and found that they're identical, but for a couple of formatting differences in lettering of subparagraphs. But in all other respects, they're the same.
Thank you, Ms. James. Any other comments or questions on that? Okay. All right. Next item on the agenda is requirements for agency reports or submitting the reports. Again, staff here just use a variety of words, discuss, adopt, report, submit. It just gives us flexibility to what we as members of the commission want to do with this agenda. And again, the requirements we had last week to us, for us, rather, and the matter of fact, that's in your packet. And Roman numeral number 2 are the statutory requirements. And then Mr. Hubinger and his staff just gave some other ideas, such as an executive summary or an organizational chart, a link to the organization's website, a 6-year history of FTE staffing levels, a 6-year history showing all funding, a list of all advisory councils whose primary function is to advise, citation of the statute, and so on and so forth. So generally speaking, these are suggestions. I would be open to comments in regards to these as well. They're more structural. Okay, seems as though that's a go. With that, yes, Mr. Javier. I'm sorry, Javier. Sorry.
Madam Chair, so to this point, I think that the concern that I have that sort of expressed at our last meeting on how to proceed here is that it seems, you know, I think we have to establish a process that makes, you know, sense to everyone, that is transparent, that you know, where everyone feels like they got, you know, the commissions that are before us have a chance to be heard, and establish a process that hopefully, you know, lasts in, you know, for years to come, because the charge of the commission is not just, you know, it's not just a temporary commission, but and it seems to me that we have a conflict in the sense of between that and the statutory requirement of for this first year of what we need to report on and recommendations we need to make. Just given the amount, the number of commissions and such, I'd like to or just to have a discussion about a process first, about kind of what how we should begin to do our work. Before you know, asking folks to actually come in, because I'm very worried just about sort of the number of hours in the day between now in the days between now and January 1st, for us to accomplish all of this. So if we could just have that discussion, I would appreciate that.
Mr. Murillo, are you suggesting then that we do Roman numeral number 7 about the schedule and structure?
I think so, yeah. I think if we have that discussion first about what we, about just kind of what process we want to follow from now into the future, then I think the other stuff will fall into place.
Those are very interchangeable, just a matter of which one goes first. But we're going to have to deal with both of them. They'll be very important, but I think it'll be easy to do that. So number 7 is schedule and structure. So maybe we could just talk about schedule. And I think we've asked all of you to come together with your scheduling availability for what we can do. Yes.
Madam Chair, I have one more question to clarify where we're going here. It seems to me, and I believe I said at the last meeting, there seems to be two tasks before this commission. One is the legislative task to go through these given number of agencies and groups and evaluate them and provide a report back to the legislature. And the other one, it seems, since Minnesota is doing this for the very first time, is to create this long-term process that Javier is talking about. And those, in my mind, are two separate things. So I just want to clarify that I'm understanding this correctly, that as we come up with a process to evaluate all these agencies, are we going to deal with creating the process first and then apply that to our legislative commission, or are we going to be creating this as we go and then at the end of our work together here, that becomes the state process?
Well, I would say at this point, Ms. Erickson Ropes, that the statute's already decided for us the process. I mean, they've already told us when, and they've given us statutory requirements, and they've told us by when. So the process and outlines, I would suspect possibly that as we go about implementing this, that may have some influence, you know, for the future. We won't know that till we go through it, but I think the statute is clear about what we are to do and when to do it.
Madam Chair,
yes, sure.
Following
sure,
up on that, then I'm a little confused about the presentation last time that we got from Mr. Eggers, who is giving us great detail about the Texas process, because there seems to be a world of difference in their timeline and resources for what I believe is a great process in Texas that's well-honed, has been over a quarter century down there. And if we're going to be building that same kind of process here in Minnesota, that we want buy-in from the House and the Senate, and the Democrats, the Republicans, and the agencies themselves and the people being served in the public, it's got to be a process of integrity that we're building, that we all can agree on. And that seems different to me than the legislative charge, especially the timelines.
Well, Ms. Erickson Ropes, the one thing that this commission is charged with is following the statutes. I mean, that is clear that we have the response. And it's a little bit unfair to compare the end product of Texas with the beginning of Minnesota. First of all, we're two different states, but are also very different places. And I also remember Mr. Eggers saying, you get started. And I think that's the important thing for us to do, is to get started, work through the process, and then our recommendations to the legislature, having gone through the process. I think it's pretty hard to prejudge a process when you haven't even followed it yet. We might find out it's actually pretty good. But if we haven't gone through it, we don't know. So I think the most important thing is, first of all, we don't have the opportunity for us as a commission to just say, well, we're not going to do it, or we're going to do it different. It's the law. But I think the other thing is, we're judging it ahead of even giving it a try. Okay, Ms. Orak.
Yes. Representative Kiffmeyer, My concern is that there's, I think there's a, just a basic question here, is that can all of this work and the process be done, set up, be fair and successful within this time frame? And I'm not coming from any kind of predisposed point of view on it, but I've been involved in major reorganizations and minor reorganizations, redesigns, restructuring, and large-scale transformation projects for over 15 years. And I have never seen this kind of timeline, and I'm concerned that we can't do it justice within this time frame. And so I think that there ought to be a discussion about do people agree that we can get it done within that? And there may be people that do believe that. I just don't. And my problem is right now is I think we don't know what we don't know. So I think that there's several phases that you need to go through to get this work done in an appropriate and successful manner. And it, you know, it starts with, you know, some kind of general overviews by the groups, because I can't make decisions on groups when I don't know what they do, how they do it, what's the context, what's their mandate, what's the history. I think that there's just a lot of stuff there, and to think that we can get this done by January 1st within, you know, the, not only the holiday season but just the really compressed timeline, I just don't think that we're going to do the job that we were all appointed to do. And I'd just like a discussion about that. Do we think we can get it done? And if the majority thinks so, I'm, you know, happy to discuss that further.
Representative Pepin.
Well, I would just make a couple of points. First of all, I agree the timeline is short. I was a little frustrated at Governor Dayton was actually supposed to have his four members appointed by, I believe it was September 1st, and that didn't happen, so that put us significantly back. It's clear in statute that these groups expire, the first group, by June 30th, 2012, so we're charged with getting it done. The statutory requirements are extremely clear, and the groups that are to be reviewed have known for, since this legislation passed, that they would be reviewed. Staff informed them. They know exactly what it is that is expected of them because it's laid out, items 1 through 13 in the statutory requirements that are listed. So this isn't like it's something that is coming as a surprise to these groups. They've had several months, 4 months to start working on this. So presumably these groups have already made a really good start to listing out or to fulfilling their statutory requirement. And so I'm not quite as worried about being able to get this done. It's once they get the information to us, there will be some work for us to make our recommendations. And I can see your point about how we want to go from there, from the process. But from the process standpoint of what their requirements are, that is very clear and laid out. So I just wanted to make those points.
Thank you, Representative Pepin. Ms. Murillo?
Representative Pepin, at our first meeting, you'd thrown out the idea that, you know, maybe, you know, we, our job is to make recommendations to the legislature. Maybe we would recommend that we need more time. And so that's what I am looking at here, because I think that everyone would agree we want an aggressive timeline and want to get the work done. This is, you know, I am not at all about sort of kicking that can down the road. Just looking, but I just don't think there are enough days or hours in those days to do this just for this first year. And so I guess I would just ask in terms of what our recommendations could be, and given, you know, that these are to sunset in June of 2012, if we could explore the possibility of making a recommendation to the legislature very early in the session about a different timeline that is just more realistic to kind of, what, you know, continue the work, begin working now, establish all this now, but just under the understanding that we can't possibly do this by, you know, by the current statutory requirements.
Thank you. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we've been having discussions and I've been listening to the conversations here, one of the things I wondered is, what if we as a group concur that the first step is actually, I believe like Ms. Ork mentioned, you know, hear from each group, hear their overview, and then regroup and say, okay, guys, now we've heard all that. What do we really think about what we heard? What do we think about what the next steps are? And say, and perhaps if people would feel comfortable saying this, that for now hold the possibility open that we may not commit to the, you know, January 1st, that we may in fact say we want more time and not say a date certain right now, but say that we have that flexibility as a group. Because let's be honest, when that legislation was first put forward and passed, it was with the thought that it ended on May whatever, you know, that it was going to happen when the legislature ended. And then we had the shutdown, and then we had this, and we had that, and, you know, there's a lot going on. And so here we are now, right before Thanksgiving, right before the holidays, and we do want to do it justice. Would people feel comfortable with perhaps the only commitment we make so far as a group, and understanding, yes, we've got the statute the way it is, but we could always, as a group, with consensus, it's my hope that when we vote, we don't do 7 and whatever, that we vote as 100%, that we have that as our goal, that we are in consensus, and that then agree that after we've heard from this first group, that we'll have that discussion about what are our recommendations with regard to timing. So that's just a suggestion.
Well, I think those are certainly viable suggestions. I do want to say that I think our credibility to the legislature is weak indeed if we don't at least do what we can in this amount of time to comply, or to at least make an effort to comply. If we make no effort and just say we want extension, that's not very credible in anybody, in any of your organizations, right?
Right.
Yes, Mr. Marino.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I'm not saying, you know, let's recess till after January 1st and just ask for an extension. Not at all. Let's continue the work, but under, like, just an acknowledgement that it's going to be, I think, impossible to meet that particular deadline. But, you know, set up a calendar, be as aggressive as we possibly can with the holidays and everything else, but recognizing that, you know, if we follow this process that Senator Bonhoff suggested, that we see everyone first and then come back together. And then I feel like at that point I would have a clear sense of what more I want to know. What are there further questions I would like people to ask? Are there commissioners we would like to bring in? Are there other experts we'd like to bring in? That I would have a better sense of that after hearing from all of them. And so sure. If we establish that calendar right now, I think that would go past January 1st.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Murillo. Ms. Ropes, yes. Ms. Erickson Ropes. I don't know, do you prefer to call Erickson Ropes? I would normally do that. You do.
Erickson Ropes would be fine.
Good, wonderful.
Alphabetical, it's easy to.
Yeah, okay, good. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe just to clarify, too, in terms of the time, what are you thinking in terms of how much time each agency or group is going to get? And let's say we have 30 different groups we're dealing with. I don't know what the exact number. Are they five-minute presentations, or are they half-hour presentations with time for questions? Because if it gets to be a half an hour that we're really getting to understand a group or a board, what they do and how they interact and how they fit into the big picture, then we're multiplying. You're going to wind up with a lot of hours, and are we going to be working 3 days a week on this, or full weeks, or once a week? So that's what I'm trying to understand here, too. Because we all want to finish our work. We're wondering how that's going to happen before the 1st.
Well, Ms. Erickson Ropes, one of the items on our agenda is to have that discussion, is to get to that point where we actually kind of take a look at those number of times and then what's available. And I think that may come fleshed out, although there are 25, and some of them are, you know, all the boards are fairly, they're boards, Board of Veterinary Medicine, so on and so forth, and they kind of come through, and so that's good. We get to that. And Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I read Section 8 of the bill, or the law now, it says that we are to, before January 1, to review and take action to verify the reports submitted by the agency, which may call for a hearing, but I don't know that it... verify does not necessarily mean to have a hearing. And it says simply to prepare a report in under 2. Mm-hmm. Conduct a review of the agency based on the criteria provided in Section 3D10 and prepare a written report. As I looked at that, my impression was we were going to write something that was basically for us to sort of say, here's where we are. at this point. So I actually think, Senator Bonhoff, that we're in agreement that that's kind of what that intermediate checkpoint is on January 1. Our duty is really moving over to Section 10, where on the February 1 deadline, which is when we shall prepare a report to deliver to the legislature and to the governor. So I feel like we're setting up a couple of deadlines here with which there's a little bit of work to do. The hard and fast number that's on here really that I see is in Section 10 in the February 1 deadline. That's when we have to have our work complete and done and delivered to the legislature and to the governor. That written report of January 1, I think, is a working document. And so it may have on it, we still would like information on X, Y, and Z about boards A, B, and C, about boards X, Y, Z, and A, B, C. And that may be what we want in that report. We don't necessarily have to sort of made up our minds on things and be prepared. What we do between January 1st and February 1 is to hold public hearings. That's what's required in Section 9, and I'm sure we'll be doing that to review what it is we're thinking, and we'll have to revise that again. Let's keep our eye on the February 1 deadline, because that's the one that's, I think, truly in place, and for this process to be credible, it has to be the one we meet. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Banyan. Mr. Intenza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I suppose the authors, but as I read this in 3D.07, mm-hmm. we're to verify their reports in sub 1, and then in sub 2, we're to prepare a written report, and that's by January 1st.
Yes.
And then the February 1st requirement only requires that we conduct public hearings. There's no, there's nothing else indicating a written report or any formal recommendation to the legislature or the governor, presumably. So I kind of like where you were going. I mean, this isn't critical. I kind of like where you were going, that we treat that report as a working document that can then be amended. But since I didn't write this, I don't see anything after January 1st about anything that's a formal report.
Is that 3D09? I'm sorry.
That's 09. All right. Well, good. All right. Well, I think that's helpful. Mm-hmm. We can see everything as sort of a work in progress.
Mm-hmm. Up to that point.
Yeah. Up to that point, yeah.
Yeah. That's helpful. Then I guess the second issue, and I guess this would be, Madam Chair, for Mr. Huminger, if it's all right. What I heard from Mr. Eggers was that the thing that made the Texas process work so well is that it wasn't just about the agencies telling us whatever they tell us. And I'm sure what they'll tell us will be really good. But it's that the Texas process had this backstop. Now, obviously, they had the advantage of an appropriation. We don't have that. But what other resources do we have to bring to bear? Because my concern, Madam Chair, and my question, Mr. Huminger, will be about resources. If all we hear is from an agency and the public doesn't have any particular input and we don't have any assistance from anybody else, I'm sure the agency is going to tell us that they do good and great things. And then Senator Gazelka will have his opinion about, is that good or bad? And I might have mine, and maybe they'll agree, and maybe they won't. But the part of what made Texas actually work wasn't that agencies reported things. In their particular case, they had independent verification, and they had other groups working on it, and you had a whole public input process that was involved. And so I'm wondering, Mr. Huminger, are there any resources other than just to help us organize our meetings that the LCC has? And I suspect I know the answer to that is not really any. And then, Madam Chair, I'd ask if we could maybe follow Senator Bonhoff's suggestion about trying to find some assistance from the Humphrey Institute or some other places, because I think if we want this to be successful, and it's important to all of us, if all we're doing is reacting to agency reports, I'm not sure we'll have accomplished a lot. And I think it would be helpful to bring some other additional resources to bear, and if we can't get those in an appropriation, finding some other folks to help us. Or maybe William Mitchell, Representative Pepin. Maybe they got some smart folks over there. But Mr. Huminger, I guess, Madam Chair and Mr. Huminger, my first question would be, are there, I know you're not the Mr. Nobles, but do you have any other resources to be brought to bear to actually analyze these reports and report on them that are that are independent of our process? And if you don't, are there any other examples with other groups you work with of bringing in other collaborators?
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair, Mr. Intenza, House and Senate leadership committed when this bill passed to support the work of this commission. And they have committed staff from House Research, House Fiscal Analysis, and Senate Council on Research and Fiscal Analysis. And the staff in those offices worked with these boards and committees at an extensive level and have a good understanding of how they operate and should be able to provide good analysis and recommendations to this commission. There's nothing that prevents us, as provided in the statute, from also seeking outside resources. And the legislature and the LCC has received support from outside groups in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. And that's in statute, and Senator Bonhoff and I have talked about that and her contacts, and any of us as members or connections with the University of Minnesota, other law school, other entities are welcome to chip in. We are certainly grateful, and we are able to receive that. Representative Pepin.
I just wanted to point out that we do have a rather large Office of the Legislative Auditor with, I believe, about 60 staff folks, and they do audits at the request of legislators. We have several of them. Several of these groups already have been audited, so I just want to keep in mind that we do have that resource, if not directly, indirectly.
Well, I would suspect, Mr. Hubinger, that through the statute that we can use the Office of the Legislative Auditor, a request of them for time.
And Madam Chair, members, we've had conversations with Mr. Nobles, and he has indicated his interest and willingness to support the work of this commission exactly that way. In addition, some of the reports that Representative Pepin has mentioned have been posted to the Legislative Reference Library website on audits and program evaluations that have been conducted on these agencies in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger, and thank you, Representative Pepin. Senator Bonhoff, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the conversation moving us from kind of that January 1 to February 1. I would still raise a thought if people, you know, could just, not a vote and not a motion, but just a discussion, to have some room around that we may get to February 1 and say that we at that point don't have all of our analysis done or this or that we may still in fact want additional data. And the reason why I raise that is because I would hate for us to have to spend all of our time here on pins and needles about that automatic sunset on June 30th. And I think that those who are going to come before us also are bringing that concern with them, that if in fact we're rushing to judgment to meet that we may not do our best work. So I'm not, again, suggesting we won't be ready or that this is impossible. I would just, and perhaps council could even advise, is that a possibility that this commission could, in fact, come forward and say that we would like, you know, an extension of that January 30th so that we do the best work with integrity?
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. I would say, just as a voting member, I don't know until I've at least gone through the process. And we may not. I don't want to prejudge, but I would want to keep an open mind as to what the results of that may be. It could be any variety of things. I wouldn't presume, and I don't think it's fair to those presenting to presume also or to presume upon us. But I think that's always a possibility because we make recommendations. Our recommendations could be a variety of recommendations. Okay. Well, good. Great discussion. Appreciate all your comments, and I think that's an important part of initiating things here, to being able to have that and talk that through. Okay, that's great. In regards to schedule, we've been working on, we're 12 members, and we want all 12 of us there at every meeting. And on the other hand, in taking a look at hearing from all the presentations, there'll be written presentations as well as they'll also be recorded. So we do understand that if we don't have 100% of us all here every time, we'll all do our very best, but we want to try and schedule that with in mind. And so we've looked at a few times on the calendars and looked ahead at things. and giving folks just time to hear the requirements, to know what's coming, and to be ready for those presentations that we're looking at the week of looking into December, that first week, December 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, those next 2 weeks, and possibly the 19th as well, that those are our opportunity. But again, remember, they have a lot of work to prepare for us. That's the most important thing. We get to listen to them and think about what they're presenting, so I'm concerned that we give them that, to have that. And so we could do it an afternoon one day. We could do an all day, morning and afternoon. We could do it afternoon. So I know that there are those of you who have your schedules, and we're taking a look right now at the 6th and 7th of December. We could meet in the afternoon, 1 o'clock until 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon, 9 to 12. Senator Daley.
Madam Chairman, Chairwoman, yes. There's this little thing. There's a stadium issue that's going on. There's a meeting that day about that little issue.
In the afternoon?
It's right now scheduled from 12:30 to 2:30.
And you're on that?
Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. Are the rest of you on it? No.
Okay.
All right. I just want to always be sure that I respect your individual schedule, and we want to make every effort to do that. But is there any time that day on the 7th?
Madam Chairwoman, that meeting is scheduled to complete at 2:30. To be completed.
Okay.
That is on the 6th.
Yeah, the 7th.
If you're talking the 7th, that's a whole other issue. That's open.
Oh, okay.
So what we're talking about?
All right. Back to the 6th, the Tuesday. Are we all good to go for that afternoon?
The 6th, the meeting is from 12:30 to 2:30.
Because I'm here.
So I'll just have to come late.
We could make it 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock, and you'd be in probably close by, so 2 to 5 maybe, instead of 1 to 4. Is that a problem for anybody else? Yes, sir.
Madam Chairwoman, I teach up in St. Cloud from 2 to 3:15 that day.
Okay.
The 6th.
Madam Chair, the 6th is not good for me either, but the 7th is great. All day is fine with me.
The morning of the 6th?
The morning of the 6th is fine.
Okay.
No.
All right. Okay. And then we have the 8th.
Same issue.
We could.
We could do it all day on the 7th.
Yep. Rather than spreading it out into 3 days, if we just do it all day, and again, we are looking for a majority being able to be here and to listen to the presentations, but let's go back again to Tuesday, the 6th. Mm-mm. 2 to 5 was a problem for you, Representative Mannion, but not for Representative Daley. He'd be a little bit late. The rest?
I can't make on the 6th. I can give you all day on the 7th.
Okay. How's
or 8th.
Only in the afternoon on the 7th.
Only in the morning.
All day the 7th is good.
Okay. So, Mr. Murillo?
Yeah, I could, on the 6th, could make the afternoon time work, but not the morning, and the 7th, I'm away all day. I'm in D.C., so.
Okay. And the 8th? You're gone, right?
I'm gone.
You're just
but I'm back the 9th. The 9th I could give all day.
9th?
On the 9th.
How's everybody doing on the 9th?
Not in the morning. The afternoon, yes.
Okay.
Till 4. I can give you till 4.
Okay, we could do 9 to 3.
9th is good all day.
Hmm?
Open. On the
9 to 3?
Open all day on the 9th. That's good.
Okay.
Oh,
great.
9 to 3. 9 to 3 on Friday?
Yeah.
You get two in that week. It just gives them a little bit more time. The other thing is, okay, let's just kind of work it all through and get her done. And on the 12th?
Madam Chair, what was the first?
I'm sorry, Mr. Murillo?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
On the 9th?
9th.
Right, but you said this. What was the first one?
That was it.
This is the only one committed to so far.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That could change. And again, we'll work it through. So
Yeah, exactly.
Just as a comment?
Yeah, you said a comment, it's a second date.
Right. That's why, yes. It was just a comment that confused you, I'm sorry. So on the 9th right now, we have 9 to 3. Okay, to the 12th, Monday.
From noon on.
I just pop up, okay. 12th, Monday?
I think I'm okay. I really like the 13th, but...
Okay.
I love the
13th. 12th and 13th sounds like most or all of the time?
No, not on my side.
Not? Okay. I did see...
No, correct. A note for the 13th. I'm out of town.
13th.
13th okay.
And 14th.
Okay, that whole, for me, that whole week is...
We're not, okay. Well, we'll look at the 12th then, and we'll videotape them for you so you can go to sleep that night watching very, very good information when you're there. 12th? Okay. That could be another 9 to 3. 13th and 14th. It wasn't sounding real good. 15th? 16th is another Friday.
15th is good.
Pardon?
15th is good.
15th? That's a Thursday.
Were we in 9-3 that Monday? Or?
Yeah. 15th is looking good?
I'm questionable. Questionable right now.
Okay.
And Mr. Murillo is out the whole week. I guess, you know, okay. For members who have full-time jobs, also yeah. It seems like to ask 2 full days in a week right before the holidays might be a little challenging.
Okay.
I mean, because that's
a good chunk of time. Do we want to do any evenings at all? Do you want to do
no.
any?
No. Well, I know. You know where I stand.
I don't think anybody in this room is necessarily looking for that. But okay, the other thing is Monday the 19th.
I teach all day.
I think if we could do 6th, 7th, or 8th, even if we cannot all, I mean, it's good to know that we have a 9 to 3 on that Friday, but it seems like that week.
If Tuesday, you're going to do 6th, 7th, or 8th, and the 9th, I would prefer the 8th in the afternoon, because then I can just stay overnight.
Okay. 8th in the afternoon? What about 8th in the afternoon? Because I know sometimes it helps. You can have your day and then... go for an afternoon, like maybe a 2 to 5 on the 8th, so we get a little bit later and give that day for you. How about 2 to 5 on the 8th? Yep. Okay. All right. Let's go through it again. On the 6th, there is... that doesn't work for enough. Now, you know, sometimes you go back and they sound pretty good after you go through the later ones.
So 2 to 5 on the...
2 to 5 on the 6th?
No, the 8th.
On the 8th?
And then all
9 to 3 on Friday?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. 1, 2, 3. And then on Monday the 12th? That was an all-day, 9 to 3? And I also had down the 15th, or would we change the 15th to 2 to 5?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Ms. Erickson Ropes.
Is there some reason we're not looking at the last week in November, trying to get more?
Okay. I am gone. And especially starting out on the first week. And getting the groups to get their work done. That's the main thing, is giving the groups. But
Madam Chair, Mr. Murillo, I don't want you to have the disservice of missing too many right away, so could you tell us again your travel or when it does work?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm away for, I'm here for the holiday, so good Christmas Day and the day after, but I'm away from the 12th until the 22nd.
Okay.
Just for, yeah.
12th to the 22nd. Yeah. Okay, that just doesn't give us much to work
right,
with.
No, I realize that, so.
All right. By the way, is the week after Christmas. Is, yeah, that's usually just a not week.
Mm-mm. I'm away.
Okay.
I can do it.
Okay, you and I can get together, Ms. Maria. Okay, and we'll watch those tapes together. Okay. Yes.
Are the meetings going to be taped and whatnot?
Yes, Representative Pepin, they are.
Then perhaps it's not so important that everyone's here because we won't be taking any votes anyway. Perhaps we're really, when we vote, we really try to accommodate people's schedules, but perhaps before then we could just all agree that we will take the opportunity to watch it online or listen online if we can't make it in person. That would be my suggestion because it's going to be impossible to get everybody here. Mm-hmm. And since we're not taking any votes, the requirement that we be here shouldn't be quite as important.
Thank you, Representative Pepin. I think that's going to be an alternative we're going to need to do. Representative Nelson, I do want to mention, though, just as an alternative, sometimes, you know, 2-5 versus 2-6, it's like I would rather put in, you know, come in once and do that rather than stretching it out and too many times. I think we ought to look at that as well.
Great.
And okay. On that,
Representative Nelson,
till 6 o'clock. If you're here and trying to get from here to a western suburbs, you're better off staying till 6 because right. Traffic is a whole lot better after 6 than it is at 5 o'clock.
Absolutely.
But be that as it may, I was going to say, when they're going to be taped and online, how quickly will they be up online so that if somebody misses one, they could see it if they're in a meeting during the day and they want to look at it that evening? Do we know that question, Mr. Hubinger? I guess would be, do you know, or
Mr. Hubinger?
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, usually it's the next day.
Okay, that's...
And it's the standard is audio. Occasionally this meeting might be videotaped, but that's not the standard.
Audio, Mr. Hubinger, thank you. Audio even makes it easier sometimes because you can listen to the presentation. We'll also have written materials. Pardon? Representative Bannion.
This question, thank you, Madam Chair. This question might be for Mr. Hubinger. If there are written materials provided at the time when someone makes a presentation, each makes a presentation, will those be linked in some way to the audio?
Mr. Hubinger, yeah. Aren't the present documents presented usually available?
Madam Chair, we put
the written
documents that are presented at the meeting. Some systems allow you to link to the specific audio. We don't have that system.
But Mr. Hubinger, we could also put them on the Sunset Commission website, and they could be listed there by date of presentation and so on?
Yes, Madam Chair. They'll be, each document will be provided or posted for each all the time.
Okay. All right. So the audio and written documents, but not on the exact same spot where the audio is. You're going to have to go to those two. But you can provide a link. And don't you usually provide a link to the audio or a little note beside it if there is an audio with it?
The link to the audio will be posted in the same place as the meeting documents.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if it might be helpful, too, if to the extent that there already have been legislative audits on some of these groups, if Mr. Hubinger, someone might provide it so that we have it when we review these meetings, because it might be helpful if we have time to question the groups, if we have an opportunity to see past audits. And I don't know how many of these have already been audited, but to the extent that we have some, I would like to be able to see that information so that I'd have the opportunity to ask questions based on those audits.
Good suggestion, Representative Pepin, and Mr. Hubinger, I'm sure you can take care of that. All right. Senator Bonham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hubinger, I wonder if you could add up the number of hours we've kind of committed to thus far, and if we assume that, you know, some, as you mentioned, Madam Chair, the boards, to just give an overview of all the pharmacy, the nurses, you know, that may go fairly quickly, but let's say if we've got 25 and we just want to get to know them all, and so we assume maybe it's going to take us 12 and a half hours total to get through 25, if you assume maybe a half hour or whatever. How many hours have we committed to in the schedule thus far? And then also to remind the group that we said that January 1st really isn't that big of a deal, so if we have to go into that first week of January, I'd much rather do that than to have more members missing, you know, hearing. But that's just a thought. So how many hours have we committed to so far, Mr. Hubinger?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonner, I understand that you've committed for 3 hours on the 8th, 6 hours on the 9th and 6 hours on the 12th for a total of 15.
So we're done.
If we were to provide 45 minutes per agency, that gets you to about that point.
Maybe that's enough for us. Yeah, I think when you start, 45 minutes is a fairly long time. Mm-hmm. And that's the question is, in that 45 minutes, we could maybe have a presentation. And depending upon, I think there's a difference between a board, and we have several of those, and then some of the others that may take a little bit more. So we may not want to have the exact amount of time for each entity as compared to some of these. Okay. Ms. Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Hubinger, on that total number. Of course, we're not calculating any lunchtime or any breaks whatsoever, so I think you probably have to back off a couple hours in that regard, because I don't think people sit here for 6 hours hearing testimony, or we won't be hearing any testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson-Ropes. Point well made in regards to the sum of the hours. I think it was just kind of a
ballpark.
Yeah. Kind of get an idea for that. And I think it also makes a difference to us on the time you want for each entity or what we can allow for that. But there's also the idea, I think, that Representative Nelson mentioned, such as instead of doing 2 to 5, do 2 to 6 and take a little break in there on those two times, just 10-minute break. And we could do that on, I think we had on Thursday, 2 to 5, we could make that 2 to 6. On Friday, 9 to 3, we would want to have some time. We could start at 8 instead of 9.
I have an 8 o'clock on.
8 o'clock on. So 9 it is, and then we could go to 4. We can stay with that 6. But okay.
Actually, Madam Chair,
I was thinking,
if on the
Mr. Intenza, I was just going to mention, in order to try and Javier, Mr. Murillo, sorry, on Thursday and Friday, that's a fairly good amount of time, but we might also do something else that week, but then that just puts you in a situation of taking more time from whatever your work is during the day, because there's already 2 days that week.
On the ninth?
On the 6th, 7th, and 8th that week.
Right. Yeah, the 6th, 7th, and 8th. The 9th, yeah.
8th and 9th is what we're doing right now.
Right. So, right, the 8th is out, but the 9th, I'm fine with that.
Okay. And the 6th or 7th?
The 6th, that was the, I'm fine with the afternoon. That seemed to be a problem with.
We ran into run of that with others as well. So the 6th is still a possibility to do it. In the afternoon. Okay. Mr. Intenza.
Well, you're asking about going until 4 o'clock on Friday the 9th, and till 3 is fine with me, and I'm guessing for the people in the western suburbs, once you start creeping to 4, then you might as well go to 8 o'clock at night or whatever, because they're going to be trapped anyway. So you might want to stop at 3 just so they can
get out and have a chance on that, especially on a Friday.
Yeah.
I'm trying to protect the member from Maple Grove.
Well, you're very kind, Mr. Intenza. We appreciate your kind and gentle side.
I have a conflict here in St. Paul, but that's easier for me to get to.
Okay. I was just thinking for... So I want to still consider the possibility of the 6th, but I'm not certain yet. On the 12th, is that an all-day 12 to 3? Mr. Hubinger, I did not... 9 to 3. Okay. And then it was on the 15th or 16th?
15th.
It was the 15th, also 9 to 3? 2 to 6.
2 to 6.
Get her done. And my question is on the 6th, if we did 2 to 6 at all, just so that Mr. Murillo could get another time slot in. And that way we could consider, let's just think of that possibility. If we did that, we would have, Mr. Huebinger, if we did do added the 6th from 2 to 6, I'm thinking of the possibility that we could maybe meet on the 6th, the 8th, the 9th, and the 12th, and the 13th on the 15th could be as well, but that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times.
Yeah, the 6th was a problem. The 6th was a problem for me, too. I didn't speak up because there was enough other problems on.
All right.
So it sounds like, yeah.
No, they can't do
that. All right. Okay. Just trying, Mr. Mario.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. With the videos available online, I'm
audios and documents, yeah.
Audio? Okay.
Audio
and on. Yeah. That would.
And Ms. Orr, okay. Could you refresh my memory? Which ones are you missing now?
I am missing the 13th and 14th, definitely. I'm out of town, and possibly 15th and 16th. I'm not sure yet what my schedule is.
Just to let you know, Ms. Orrick, we're not, so far we don't have the 13th or 14th down, okay?
Okay.
And the 15th is 2 to 6, and that's a possibility for you.
Yeah, it's questionable right now.
Or questionable, okay. Well, it looks like that's flowed fairly well, at least at this time, that we hit the majority of people and have alternative audio and so on. Great. Mr. Huebinger, we'll look at those dates then of the, just to repeat again for the record, 8th, 2 to 6, on Friday the 2nd from 9 to 3, on the 12th from 9 to 3, and on Thursday the 15th from 2 to 6. Friday the 9th. And that's how many hours?
9 to 3.
Yes, on Friday 9 to 3. But a total hours then?
Total.
Does that come out to the same 16?
I've got it on 20.
20? Okay, that gives us a total of 20 hours. I think that should do it. And I would suggest that, again, just as a discussion, it's always good to discuss from something if somebody doesn't give it out. We could maybe do a half-hour presentation with 15 minutes questions, or do you want to allow more like 20 minutes for presentation, 20 minutes for questions, and that gives us 5 minutes for a break between?
Madam Chair.
That's good.
Ms. Representative Nelson.
I think 20 minutes would be better, and we could give us more time for discussion or questions, and if you give them a half hour, they'll fill the time up. We limit it down, and maybe they go over. It won't be quite as bad as if we give them a half hour and they go to 40 minutes.
And then we're stuck.
Then we're stuck. If we limit it to 20 minutes and give us more time to ask questions and get answers.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Over this way.
Senator Gazelka.
I agree with Representative Nelson. And if possible, if we can get whatever documentation they're going to present to us ahead of time so that I can look at it before I get here, that would be great. That would help me formulate questions.
Thank you, Mr. Intenza, very much. Appreciate it. Great. I think that that's one of the things that I think we would want the presenters to get those documents to us. I think it might be good 3 days before or 2 days before. Mr. Huebinger, can you give a kind of a standard? Is there anything, especially in this case, it's a presentation. It's not like some of the other committees. From what you, yes, Mr. Huebinger.
Staff have talked to a number of the agencies being reviewed, and most of them have the bulk of their reports ready to go. They're waiting to see what other requirements the commission may add today. So I think it's quite feasible for them to submit them to us so we can get them posted to the commission website a couple of days in advance of the hearing.
Okay. Let's do that then, that they would submit them and have them available. I would say by close of business on 3 days, because it's more definite, and that way we have a full 2 days before, and I want to give you more of an advantage. I think they'll be ready to go. I think one of the other things that we're going to need is the, again, this is just kind of a general issues. The schedule, we're good, 2020 structure. And then what would we like them to have? We also have the legislative auditor reports. And might we take a look at the document that has the statutory requirements and a couple other things that are possibilities that we could use, and then we also need to have just a brief discussion about the order. But let's take a look at the requirements. Is there anything you would like to take off that list? Both the statutory and Roman numeral 1 executive summary and Roman numeral 3 other requirements. Is there anything you'd like to take off? Okay, it seems as though we're okay with what is here then. Is there anything you want to add to this at all? Mr. Murillo.
Madam Chair, I would just say I wouldn't want to take anything off of here, but that to our previous discussion, that I think that once we see everyone, I think that's when I'd have a better sense of what else we'd want to know. So just, mm-hmm. To me, I think it'd be sort of that, what Senator Bonhoeffer referred to as kind of like us reconvening and at that point. So to this point, this looks fine. I wouldn't take anything off, but I don't know what to add.
Okay. Ms. Orak?
Yes. Madam Chair, I want to echo his comments that I certainly wouldn't take anything off. I may have additional questions, and I'm just wondering what the process would be after that. Would we ask for further written information from them? Would we call these boards or commissions before the committee again? Are we open to either of those, or is there something that is already set that we need to follow?
Well, I would say, Ms. Orak, that certainly is within our authority and the purview of this commission, that this is a starting point, and to ask for more. I think if you think of something along the way, but I would say absolutely that would be within our authority, as I understand, to certainly do that.
Thank you.
Yes. Senator Daley.
Madam Chairwoman, will there be any public input? Certain people that may have specific knowledge of how well they're doing, or perhaps some opportunities for improvement, and they want us to know about the organization, things that we don't know that they may not tell us, that's important to know as we make that decision?
Well, I think that is certainly something that we as a commission have the authority to establish time for that. The question is, when they're making their presentations and just going through all that, you want to do it as they present, or let them all present and then have a time in January that where we might consider that?
Madam Chair?
Yes. Yes, Representative Nelson.
I think for this, and again, this we're getting back to, we were talking process and time, but I think during this first go-around, that might be the best, is let them get through their presentations. I think in the future, as we go forward on this, we may want to set up more time in the front loaded, and so that we can have the presentations, and if there is pro and con, have it there at the time so it's fresh in our minds. But I think for this first time go around, we need to get through them, and so we have them in front of us so we can at least get the initial part done, and then have, if there's, we want to schedule time in January to have, or even after session starts, to have public give testimony would be a good thing.
Okay, thank you, Representative Nelson. Ms. Erickson-Ropes?
Yes, I was just going to say the same thing. I'd advocate for a separate time for public input.
Okay, Representative Pepin?
I'd be fine with that too, Madam Chair. The other thing I was thinking is perhaps since we don't have time for public input, perhaps we could allow for the members of the public to provide us statements, and if they would like to pass them out at the time,
written.
If they have specific concerns, because if there are specific concerns, I would at least like to have the opportunity to address those while these groups are here, if there's something specific. But I do think it would take too much time to just open it up to to take testimony. But I feel like if members of the public feel compelled that they want to tell us something, that they should be able to provide that testimony to us.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bonhoeff.
Madam Chair, I concur with the thoughts about holding the public hearings in January. I actually thought that Representative Bennion said that was actually part of the statutory requirements to hold the public hearings. So I would hate, Representative Pepin, in terms of we don't want to send a message if so anyone was listening today that, you know, all they'll have perhaps would be the opportunity to submit written testimony. I do think it's very important, particularly during this first go-round, that we give the public more time than less time, and that we, if we, you know, say we have two hearings for the public to come and that's not enough and we need a third, that we make sure we're available so that, you know, we never want to have it said that we curtailed public comment.
Mm-hmm. And I would suspect that all of us have the desire to have that and to mm-hmm. certainly give that opportunity. I think our discussion is about when. Yeah. And I think when we think of public comment, we think of maybe more of a verbal testimony or something. But I think what Representative Pepin is... no, you look so much alike. That we allow people to submit written comments.
Yes.
At any time.
Yep.
I mean, that is the public's right to do so anyway. I think about the only thing that we do is the public testimony in regards to verbal or here in a committee hearing. Mm-hmm. But at any time, people can submit comments in support of suggestions or anything else they would like. I would suggest, Mr. Hubinger, that, you know, you just let people know on the website that they're welcome to do that, to make comments, or which, of course, is their right to do. But
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to have a schedule published ahead of time of which one of these groups we're going to do on which days?
Great.
Because if somebody wanted to submit a written testimony to us so we can have in front of us, it wouldn't do them any good if it's 2 weeks after that the group was there. So if we have a schedule laid out, so when which ones are going to be when?
Wonderful segue, Representative Nelson. Very next item for us to do. In front of you or in your packet, either last time or this time, you would have a list of all of the councils, boards, or other. And what we had here is there are 17 health boards, and then there are a variety of others, four councils of color and four other councils' boards. So I would suggest that maybe we start out by having all of the health licensing boards. Just to mention, by the way, it's 16, not 17. One, the Office of Mental Health Practice was removed from the statutes, so we no longer have that one, so it's down to 16. We're so efficient, we already shortened.
How did that happen?
In statute, Mr. Hubinger, right?
Madam Chair and members, I can't remember what year it was, but the council was abolished.
Mm. Okay, so it's still on the list. It's good we have the opportunity to at least do that. And so we have 16 of those health licensing boards. It might be that they're the ones that probably have more staff or more opportunity to... have folks, they've been around maybe a lot longer, not quite sure. I'm just thinking there's 16 of them, that it might be a good place to start. On the other hand, open to suggestions. Kind of gets our feet wet on something. Okay. Seeing that seems to be going well, we'll do that. We'll do the health boards. Mr. Hubinger, from what you know of these boards, is 20 minutes... a fair amount of time for every one of them?
Madam Chair, I think that boards and agencies generally are really good at prioritizing their time and letting you know what's important, and that they can do an overview of their agencies in 20 minutes.
Okay. All right. So 20 minutes then for them, and then with the 16 of them, it would we would be able to lay that schedule out if you would do that. Right now they're listed here. This is an alphabetic listing. We do. We have 20 minutes for presentation, 20 minutes for question or discussion. And so if you would just line that out, just taking that alphabetically and just go through them and schedule them up in that first meetings in a way. And then I would also say we need just a 10-minute break or something on a four-hour meeting, or at least a half hour for lunch.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Hubinger.
It might be helpful from staff's perspective if we can have some flexibility so that we can take into account their schedules as well, just to make sure that they fit into the schedule that the commission is adopting.
Mr. Hubinger, yes, very much so. When you've got this many on the list and that much time, that would be just fine.
And Madam Chair, one other item. The second item in that list is the Office of Unlicensed Complementary and Alternative Healthcare Practice. The staff from that office have pointed out that they are not a licensing board. They're not an independent agency. They're actually an office within the Department of Health. And their request that they wanted to bring to this commission is that their review be conducted when the Department of Health is reviewed in the next cycle and not be done here in this round.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Hubinger, in a sense here, one of the purposes of the Sunset Advisory Commission is to look at these things, and I think if there might be just, I don't know, was this on the list, though, as far as?
In the statute.
Yeah. Right, so I think that's a request, but I think we'll stick with them here. It'll give them an opportunity to present. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, we'll do that. And then we can have the same thing with the other eight. I don't know that they all need to be together. If they want to, maybe they could, but if they want to, depending again on their time schedule, would we, as a commission here, would you feel comfortable letting Mr. Hubinger work that out with the presenters so that they can have flexibility of times rather than us? I don't particularly care. I just want to hear from all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it isn't. Okay. All right. And if any of you have any input in that regard, but otherwise we'll let Mr. Hubinger work that out with the different boards, councils, and entities. Okay.
No,
except for this last, the overview. Okay. Mr. Hubinger, the last thing on our agenda today was
insurance.
If we had time.
That are approved.
Is this overview?
Madam Chair, I understood it was around 10 minutes.
About 10 minutes, okay. With that information, with the rest of you like to, we can repeat this again. It's at 10 minutes, but might give you a little bit of a sense of all the boards. Would you like to do that?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Mr. Hubinger, would you go ahead and we'll have the... presentation.
Madam Chair, members, Mr. Weiberg and Ms. Brecken are here to provide an overview of the licensing boards. Mr. Weiberg is from the Board of Pharmacy, and Ms. Brecken is the Director of the Board of Nursing.
Madam Chair,
I'm sorry,
just a question to clarify. So is the presentation on just on the licensing boards or on the boards that they...
Mr. Murillo, my understanding is it's on the health licensing boards, that category. And that's correct, Mr. Weiberg?
Correct.
Okay. And Mr. Weiberg, you have this overview. Is this in a printed document that you're presenting from?
Yes, the commission members should have.
Okay. And Mr. Hubinger, just again, just because we're starting out, this would be available on the Sunset Commission so that we can make that available to the public or... All right, good. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Weiberg, and welcome, Ms. Brecken, to the Sunset Advisory Commission. We appreciate your taking the time to have put something together for us in a very short period of time. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I am Cody Weiberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy. We appreciate the time to be with you here today to speak briefly. We actually hadn't necessarily intended to want to be on the agenda, but after we were at the last commission hearing, we did want...
Mr. Weiberg, I'm sorry, just a moment. Is there a... I'll check mine just to be sure. We've got nothing going on. Okay. If there's anybody here that needs to just silence so we don't have that interference, thank you. Sorry, Mr. Weiberg, would you please proceed? Maybe it's not.
Okay. After attending the last week's meeting, actually what I did, I am the chair of the policy committee for the health licensing boards. And I sent Mr. Ubinger a document, a PowerPoint presentation, that the executive directors of the boards had made up late last year when we realized that there would be a lot of new members in the legislature and on the health committees that have oversight for the boards. And I just thought it would be useful for members of the commission to have this information. When we sent it to Mr. Ubinger, he gave us the opportunity to appear here, and we certainly accepted that. One of the things that that I'd like to point out is the boards are not advisory boards. There are basically two types of boards in state government, and I've had the opportunity over the last dozen years to actually manage both types of boards. When I was the Medicaid Pharmacy Program Manager at the Department of Human Services, we had something called the Drug Utilization Review Board. The members were appointed by the commissioner, although in reality the commissioners in both the Ventura and Plenty administration delegated that to me. And they were entirely advisory. The Department of Human Services could accept or reject whatever advice that they gave. And then you have licensing boards like the health licensing boards. We're actually small but full-fledged state agencies. And pursuant to Chapter 214 of the statutes, and each of us have a separate practice act, we actually have the power and the duty to promulgate rules, to set standards of practice, to issue licenses and registrations. Some of us inspect facilities. We investigate complaints. And we issue disciplinary orders or take other enforcement action. Just as an example of the complaints, in the last biennium.
Mr. Weiberg, yep. I can see in the opening comments and the number of slides we have here that I just want to encourage you that there are some things that each board will do, but just give us an overview, all right? Thank you.
All right. Madam Chair and members of the committee, just point out then on this first slide that although we're small individually and we're individual agencies, collectively we do employ nearly 200 staff members, and our biennial appropriations are approximately $35 million. There we go. There are actually 18 health licensing boards. And they're not all up for review this time around. And I should say health-related licensing boards. 15 are the Chapter 214 boards that are health licensing boards that are funded out of the fees that we collect, not the general fund, not tax revenues. Three boards are general revenue funds, although some of those also collect fees. The job of the health-related licensing boards is basically to protect the public. We do that by enforcing standards of safe practice and ethical conduct, by investigating and resolving complaints against licensed health professionals, by providing public information to consumers of healthcare services, and by assuring an ethical and competent healthcare workforce. That last one we do primarily through licensure. This slide will show you the number of licenses that we actually have issued. And we issue approximately all 18 boards together, about 275,000 licenses. And just the licenses for the health boards, if you leave out cosmetology and barber boards, it's about 240,000 licenses. That means that the boards have really a significant regulatory impact on healthcare in this state, which accounts for about 14% of the state's total gross product, according to the health department, or about $34.5 billion a year. I'll turn it over to Ms. Freckin at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Weiberg. My name is Shirley Brecken, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Nursing. One of the points that we really wanted to make when we talked about an overview of the health licensing boards is the way that the health licensing boards have really maximized technology, increased their efficiencies, and worked together in a very collaborative way. We are co-located in the same building. We have an administrative services unit, which is a voluntary means that we come together to handle our human resources, purchasing, and accounting accounting activities. And that is not required in law. It is, in fact, something that we have collectively figured out how to do together. The executive directors meet monthly and work through many of the processes or decisions that we have to make in sharing that. In addition to supporting the boards themselves, as you know, we are fee-funded agencies. We're required by law to collect fees sufficient to cover our expenses. And that those fees are then deposited in a special government revenue fund from which you draw the appropriation to the health licensing boards. Our fees are determined by the legislature. They are not. It used to be that they were determined in rule, but they are now determined at the time of the appropriation, again, making that attempt to balance that the revenues that we collect are sufficient to cover the expenses that the boards have. Those reserves, or the monies that we collect that are greater than to cover the expenses, are intended to sort of be, first of all, it provides a cash flow, because sometimes some boards may have, say, contested case hearings that actually get to be very expensive into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they would not have been determined at that given time. Additionally, it allows all of the boards to, as they utilize those funds to then come back to the legislature at a later time in order to raise fees to pay back their share into that pool of money. Those reserves, I think many of you are very aware, have been tapped into in the last couple of legislative sessions. And in fact, since 2005, over $16 million has been moved from that reserve fund into the general fund to cover the shortfall that the government has experienced. In addition to the work of the health licensing boards, the fees that are collected cover a variety of other programs, and I'm not going to go into those. They are listed for you on slide 7, but I think the thing that's important to recognize is, again, since 2004, about $24.5 million has gone from licensure fees to support other programs. Many of those programs are connected to the regulatees that the board serve, but some of them are ways that we've been able to, that collectively the state has been able to fund scholarships and loan forgiveness programs for healthcare professionals, and especially for long-term care facilities. In addition to that, the boards collect a surcharge for the e-licensing services of the state. That, up until 2011, was actually taken from the reserve fund, but since that time, that fee has been assessed to the individual licensees themselves, and that amounts to 10% of their licensure fee, by the way, over the next over a total of 6 years, that will have to be provided. And so that's listed on number 7 also. On slide number 8, what you'll see are actually three particular expenses that are significant for the boards. The boards are required by law to get their legal services from the Office of the Attorney General. And so collectively, since 2004, that's amounted to about $17 million that the boards have put toward that particular service. The Health Professional Services Program is a monitoring program that the boards have collectively funded, and again, it's required in law in Chapter 214 that the boards must provide this kind of a service for those individuals who, for some reason, their practice may be impaired due to illness and chemical dependency. The Administrative Services Unit is the unit I spoke about. That is that voluntary collective agency that or service, that unit within our boards that we use to provide, as I said, the accounting, purchasing, and human resources services. Slide number 9 just shows you the organizational structure that we use, starting with the executive director's forum and then the management committee, which then has the oversight of the administrative services unit. Then the other committees that we have within our forum to be able to carry out those collective kinds of services. I think the thing that's really important as you look at slide number 10 is the recognition that we have been very collaborative. And innovative and effective in how we have determined to provide these different services. We have been providing online government services since 2001. Not everybody started, but that was when the first time that we started offering online services. So virtually all of our licensure services are now available 24/7 to our licensees as well as to the general public. We've been recognized nationally as a model, and we've been recognized within the state as a model. In fact, the SMART program that is managed that was started by the Management and Budget Division was actually modeled after our administrative services unit. I think that the very important thing that I want to share with you is that the boards take their mandate of public protection very seriously, carry that out through our licensing and discipline functions, as well as inspection and, in the case of nursing education program approval process. I think that what's really the most important part is that in addition to that individual commitment that the boards have to that mandate of public protection, we are also committed to working together in this voluntary and collaborative fashion. And it has created for us efficiencies and effectiveness that we could not have accomplished on each of our own. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know Mr. Weiberg would too.
Thank you, Ms. Brecken. And Mr. Weiberg, are any questions?
I do.
Senator Barnoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the three boards that are general fund boards rather than coming from fees, I noticed it was it's on slide 6.
Yes.
EMSRB, Barbers, and Cosmetology. Do you have some sense of why they're separated from that? And then a question for Representative Pepin, because I don't have that before me. Are those three, the fact that we weren't reviewing them at this time, have we noted that they're different and put them on a different schedule? Are they
Representative Pepin?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, we didn't particularly put them in this order because we discussed last time because of that. Perhaps staff did that for that reason, but it wasn't anything that I don't believe Representative Banyan and I certainly didn't have the knowledge to be able to do that. I wish I could say I did, but I think staff had the knowledge.
Representative Pepin and Senator Bonhoff, one of the things I want to remind us on the Sunset Advisory Commission, this isn't just on-off, yes, no. I mean, we also have the authority within this to do where's duplication, where right. is things that we can do. And one of the risks we have is that the question I think you're kind of looking at is, why should they be from the general fund? Is this one of those things that maybe right. they should be treated like the other boards
exactly.
instead of from the general fund? And I think that my understanding is that I think there is some flexibility in what we do in making we have a requirement to listen to all of these, but I don't know that we can't go and take a look at this and say that one of our recommendations would be they should be treated the same.
Well, Madam Chair, and I guess that was, I guess I was wondering why they were exempted out and then wondering if at some point I would think we would want to hear from them as well, but perhaps they're on a different cycle, and so I'm just raising it as a question.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Mr. Shepherd, you have some insight for us.
Madam Chair and members, I'm not certain Ms. Brecken may need to help me with this, but the Minnesota Statutes 214.01 defines health-related licensing boards and non-health-related licensing boards, and the ones scheduled for review this year are the health-related licensing boards. And I believe that the barbers and the cosmetology are included in the non-health health-related licensing boards, which are scheduled in Group 3 that expired June 30th, 2016.
Got it.
And so that was, I think, when the staff and Representative Pepin were putting this together, we kind of drew a distinction between the health-related and non-health-related, and that's, for better or worse, the reason why it's done that way.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Shepard. You mentioned the barbers and cosmetology. What about the MSRB?
Madam Chair and members, I am not sure about the EMS board.
That seems medical.
It does, but they're not listed in Chapter 214, and there are several groups in the process of putting this together. There are some groups in state government that aren't on this list at all at any point because I can't explain why. We just didn't write them in, and that may be one of the commission's recommendations when you put together a bill for next session to try to pick up groups that we may have missed, or else I'm just not finding it right now as I'm scanning them.
I suspect, Senator Bonhoff, you're thinking, might it be appropriate to just invite them in to just comment on that, though? Mm-hmm. Mr. Shepard, we can request that, can we not? Even though they're not scheduled, just request them to come in?
Madam Chair and members, yes.
Okay.
Specifically, the statute allows this commission to look at groups that overlap with some of the other groups. That if the EMS group is not on the list, they would not be sunset. They would not expire, but right. You certainly could ask them to come and make a presentation.
Senator Bonhoff, is that...
Well, Madam Chair, it just seemed to me if they're all part of the same thing, even though they're funded differently, it would be nice to get an overview of all of them. Mm-hmm. So time permitting, it would be great to hear mm-hmm. from those three as well. Members concur.
Senator Bonhoff, that might be one of those where it could be shorter, mm-hmm. just to allow for that. Ms. Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Weiberg and Ms. Brecken. I think this is a brilliant place to start. I don't know if somebody did that on purpose, Mr. Hubinger, but to be looking at the health licensing boards and how they work collaboratively together as a model is something we really need to keep in mind as we go through everyone else, because they have been doing just wonderful things, and I think this is where we want other people to consider going. And maybe it's because they're healthcare people and they deal with the body as a whole and they know systems and that sort of thing and how one thing affects another. But to have a group of people voluntarily coming together to collaborate on purchasing and IT and payroll, all that sort of things, and finding those areas where they might be having duplicative services or there might be some efficiencies realized, they're already doing it, and I think they're doing a brilliant job. So this is a great place to start.
Ms. Erickson-Ropes, one of the things you will find is that staff have really good ideas to help, mm-hmm. you know, do this, and they're interested in our success and look for those things. But it's encouraging, isn't it, to know that they do, that they are looking for those opportunities. So it's to their credit. Thank you, Mr. Hubinger, Mr. Weiberg, and Ms. Brecken. Any other questions? The one question that I had on this one was in regards, when you drew your organizational chart and you have your Council of Health Boards, what would you consider above that as far as you're accountable to whom in regards to the Council of Health Boards? Ms. Brecken.
Madam Chair and mm-hmm. Members of the Commission, the Council of Health Boards is actually codified in Chapter 214. It was codified after it had been in existence for a little while because the legislature had come to the health licensing boards when there have been new groups come forward that want to have a board or want to be licensed. And the legislature came to the health licensing boards and said, will you help us to do a review or analysis of the need for such a licensing board or whatever. And so I believe it was 3 years ago that the legislature actually, I wouldn't swear to that, but 2 or 3 years ago that the legislature actually codified the Council of Health Boards. Again, it was a voluntary group. It's generally comprised of one board member and the executive director from each of the health licensing boards. We had come together in that particular format or in that group, again, to address things collectively, whether it was legislatively or, public media-wise, whatever it was. And as we were functioning, that's when the legislature looked to us. So it's really for the purpose of internally, again, addressing common issues, but the legislature determined to use it for review and analysis of for possible licensure of other health professions.
Thank you, Ms. Brecken. Mr. Weiberg, you have something to add.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, if I might add, this organizational chart you see before you is the way that the independent health licensing boards work together. You will see in our reports, and by the way, I might add to the committee that now that we know for the health licensing boards, I hope none of my colleagues skewer me for this, but now that we know the other requirements that you've adopted, the staff recommendations, we could probably have all of our reports to you by next week because we have been working on them the last couple of months and they're largely done. But at any rate, this is just how we work together. Each one of our agencies does have its own organizational chart, which will be in the reports that we give. Our board members are all appointed directly by the governor. They serve fixed terms. The executive directors of the health licensing boards are designated in Chapter 214 as the chief administrative officers of the agencies. We are in the unclassified service, which means we serve at the pleasure of the board. They can remove us at any time. The governor can also call the board into special session to ask them to review our performance and can appoint an additional board member at that time. So the org chart really goes from, in my mind, the citizens of the state to the governor to the board, which are political appointees, and then each executive director runs the day-to-day operations of the board. So that's how we individually work.
Thank you, Mr. Weiberg. I think that was very helpful. Senator Bonner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Weiberg, or either of you, are you involved in the OET consolidation? Is your group under the purview of that consolidation? Could you just share that with us?
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, all state agencies are involved in the IT consolidation,
right.
And we did a considerable amount of work on that this fall as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weiberg. Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask you both about something I want to make sure I heard this right, that the fees collected are actually specified in statute, and that my first question is the use of those fees directed in any way, or are and if so, I guess this is a request, in terms of the reports that you – thank you for having them so close to done, but could you highlight for us where those directions are for where your fees are? Because we have language in our reports, Madam Chair, that would indicate what enables them to exist, what determines their purpose, but doesn't actually tell us where to go look to find out how their fee setting is done. And it seems to me in the process of doing this review, that's information we'd like to know.
Mr. Weiberg? Ms. Brecken?
Madam Chair, Representative Bannion, it may vary, and I'm sorry I can't give you the statutory site off the top of my head. That requires us to collect fees sufficient to cover revenues, but I know it's in everybody's report, and we can get it to you also. Additionally, I think I'm speaking correctly when I say that all of the practice acts for each of the boards gives the board the authority to collect fees to carry out its functions and business.
If you could just, Madam Chair, if
yes,
I may,
Representative
just, Bannion. Just to be sure that make sure that if I can just ask that those be included in your reports, I think that would be just very helpful to us all. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the question talking about the fees, if your boards were to sunset would the fees sunset with them, or would the fees continue on and just go into the general fund or into the special revenue fund that...
Madam Chair.
Mr. Weiberg.
Representative Nelson. I don't know that we're entirely certain. My understanding after reading the sunset legislation is that if the legislature doesn't act for our particular agencies, then starting July 1st of next year, we have a year to wind down. What I would say is that unless the language in the statutes is repealed that sets fees, that language will be there. The question would be, what happens, who would collect it at that point? If it's not the health licensing boards, then who would collect it? We have, as Ms. Brecken mentioned, online licensing systems, and we have online licensing and regulatory databases that allows us to collect and account for those fees and get them transferred into the special revenue fund. So the question would be, you know, yes, the statutory language would be there unless the legislature takes the statutory language away, but unless the function was transferred somewhere else, there'd be no one to collect the money.
Well, Mr. Weiberg and Ms. Brecken, we appreciate that information and a good question, but that's why we're going to work very diligently and very hard. I think we don't want to be presumptive about our decisions by the whole commission for next year, but certainly Representative Mannion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify on this last question, sure. Within the Sunset Commission statute, all of the functions transferred to the Department of Administration, mm-hmm. that would include the licensing and fees if we do nothing else. If they simply expire, since those still exist in statute, those would have to continue, and the language says that goes onward to the Department of Administration unless we pass something that says send them someplace else.
Thank you, Representative Bannion. I think we have that clarified then. The function continues, the fee continues, maybe done differently if this commission does not do its work, which is very important, and make those recommendations. So thank you very much, Representative Bannion. All right. Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. This is a helpful insight. Members, I just want to go back to we have the requirements. We had that discussion, and we all agreed, but we didn't have an official motion. So I just want to, staff just want us to have it on the record as an actual motion adopted. So if we could have a motion adopting the Sunset Advisory Commission. It's a pre-printed sheet that we went through before. Yes. Representative Bannion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move that the commission accept and adopt the report requirements, including the other requirements in Part 3.
Okay. All right. Senator Dabanov, anything else?
Yeah, I might just... I might need staff to help me with this language, but is there something within that motion that we could state that would also capture the intention to leave open after hearing the first report that we have reserved the option to request additional information, something that would capture the spirit of that, and if anybody has any ideas how to say that. So how about a preliminary?
Or initial report?
Initial.
Would initial,
yes,
report
initial. That,
to
yep.
title it?
Yep, that would work.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea. One caution that I want to advise you, though, that once you have all the same information coming forward into you, if you change things for the next group, you know, we just want to be careful about doing that. So, because they're going to be we want to have that consistency. And then the other thing is just to let you know, remember, we can ask for additional information from all of them, and that can be subsequent to hearing everything. But maybe as you go along, because different boards, different councils or other things may have different questions. So this comes from everybody. Others may have special questions. I just want to be careful. But, you know, I think adopting these as a
preliminary
set
of findings,
you know.
Preliminary overview.
Preliminary requirements subject to the wishes of the commission. And we'll all think about that carefully so we have that consistency and fairness to everybody. I just know how nervous they are about getting everything done to come. So when you say they might come up, we might come up with something else, that gets them a little nervous. So I just, okay. With that, we will consider that as a possibility that we might add something to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Bannion, is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay. Mr. Huminger?
Madam Chair, at the last meeting, there was some discussion about possibly clarifying item 13 under the statutory requirements.
That would be a good time to do that, Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me see if I can do this. I can send you an email, Mr. Huminger, to what I'm about to suggest as what we would do. Priority-based budgeting would be to look at activities. What do we get from this agency in return for their service to us? So we would ask them to identify all activities that they do and to make a statutory reference to where their activity is connected to the law. Then for each activity, there should be at least one performance measure or defined outcome. I believe these types of and this is subject for discussion. This is just me talking right now, but I would believe that they should be immediate or intermediate. We don't, long run goals aren't terribly helpful. I would request that priority based budgeting it relies on measuring outputs rather than inputs. And then I'd want to see a narrative that would that for each of those activities would identify whether the activity is achieving its purpose. Is the measurement reliable and verifiable? Could someone independently check to see if this has been measured correctly? And my last request would be that when you make these types of measures, make them positive, not negative. Okay, you're trying to achieve X. What have you done toward achieving X? Not have you prevented Y from happening? You might also ask agencies to look at how the budget has been devoted to this activity and whether or not it's permitted them or prevented them from meeting their goals. Perhaps there are activities that we're doing in agencies that are simply not receiving enough funding. I think this is an appropriate time for agencies to indicate where they're short and where they might be able to find reallocations. What efficiencies do the agencies see that would allow them to better meet their goals? I'd like to see a discussion of that. And then can the agency identify other agencies or private sector that also provide those same goals? I'd like to see that as well. And within that, any interaction that happens, just as the interactions we heard today about these,
as many that have changed it, and I'm
including three that we're not going to review. So a priority-based budgeting would again be activity-oriented. It would be to come up with defined outcomes that are reliable, verifiable, and positive. That would be my suggestions, and that's the result of the research I've found on this topic.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Discussion. Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair, I think I'd like to vote on setting the priorities, but I would like Representative Bannion, if he's going to email that to Mr. Huminger, everything he said here, if he could email that to all of us so that we could look at it and possibly that piece of it, look at it the next meeting as a, because there's a lot that was in part of that, and there are some people that aren't here today that had to leave might want to look at that also.
Representative Nelson, one of the things that this is a statutory requirement, so it's already there. What we're trying to do here is help clarify the definition of priority-based budget. So it's not an option to just not do it, but I think it's more.
That's not what I said.
A definition?
No, I'm just the definition that he's got. I would like to see that in writing and look at it mm-hmm. in writing be able to absorb it. Mm-hmm. I agree that that's part of the budget and that's okay. part of the legislation, but everything he said there is not part of the legislation. That's his interpretation
yes,
of it,
right. Which he's sure. clearly said so.
Yeah, and so I'd like to see that, and I agree that we should pass the motion that's on the floor as far as accepting these these requirements that we pass out, but the priority-based budgeting part of it, I'd like to see that in writing, what everything you just said here.
Okay. Before doing that, again, this is like a draft. It's something, you know, put out for discussion. And I just took a few notes down, but even without doing that, Representative Nelson, what might be your idea of priority-based budgeting? It might be helpful to just, what do you think?
Madam Chair, that's part of the question that I don't know. I mean, how you take priority, depending on what you're doing. As a carpenter, when I'm going to build a house, I put the foundation or the footing in before I put the foundation. And so you got your priorities there, and that's kind of the way that my mind works. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that he said there, it's when you're looking at an agency, it's his interpretation of what he has priority-based budgeting. And each one of our these commissions, agencies might have a different idea what they is. So like I said, I'd like to see what he put down in writing. It sounded reasonable, but I'd like to see it in writing.
Okay. First of all, Representative Banyan, do you have that in writing right now?
Only on my laptop, and it's written with 100% recycled electrons.
Okay, but you can forward it to a staff Absolutely. Person and yeah. get that done in writing?
To you, I guess, yes.
Okay.
And it could be in an email. That's perfectly fine. Like I said, recyclable electrons works for me also.
Okay. Ms. Orak?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have the same issues as Representative Nelson, that you know, priority-based budgeting is, I think, is very subjective and has a lot of definition, and I'm just concerned that we don't have the time to have a full discussion right now. And while I understand that it's in the law that we have to pay attention to that, obviously, and work with it, I think that it requires a lot more time and a lot further and exhaustive discussion than we'd be able to have right now. So I share the same concerns.
Okay. Well, Ms. Orak, one of the things that we're in a situation here is that we do have it as a statutory requirement. If we don't give the entities some guidance on that, they are left to take our discussion and other things to do that. But certainly, without question, that putting that in writing and getting that around to all of you and having that. I just think that while we're all together right now, if possible, if we could just give input into what you think, your opinion of what you think priority-based budgeting might be. And Mr. Murillo, you?
I wonder if someone could just, Madam Chair, sorry, I'm just point to where that is in the statute. I just, the priority-based.
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, Mr. Murillo, it is in Section 3D.06, Agency Report to Commission, Clause 2, in amongst the information that the agencies are required to report.
When I think of a priority-based budget, I think, usually it's if the statute requires you to do that, that would be a priority, that would be a mandate. Priority might be, again, what's the most important tool? Like your online system is really important to your licensing. So your budgeting, as well as the statute that requires you to do all of that, the online licensing part is a priority part of your budget then, because licensing is really crucial and essential, and your budget should reflect that. That's how I kind of think of it, and I think of starting with statute and then what are the tools that you need, or the budgeting that you need, or the staff you need, or office space, or variety of those things that go with that priority, which I think is already in the statute mandating you to do that. I think the goal somewhat here is, the mission creep that you add on nice-to-haves that are great but not essential. And you could do it with just this, and this would be even nicer if you could do it with that. But essentially, priority-wise or essential, this is your essential requirement by statute, and this is what I must have to accomplish that. I think when I think of prioritizing, starting from there, I think some of these other things were some additional good suggestions as well. Senator Bonoff.
Yes, Madam Chair. I look at it almost like a mathematical formula, because there are certain things that are of the highest value that you can do in the most efficient manner, and so it's a calculation of using your resources to have the highest valued outcome. And so it's not always, you know, you may say, well, this is just a nice to have, but yet if you did that nice to have, then something that's required would be that much better because you've increased your productivity. So I think it's an understanding of highest value when it comes to a strategic plan, mission, objectives, long-term goals that would also give the biggest payoff done in the most efficient manner.
Mm-hmm. That can contribute. Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair and members, in a broad sense, I think everybody's right, the things that they said. In a broad sense, when I think of a priority-based budget, and one of the things I was kind of thinking about going, you know, when I was working on this legislation, is that if you were to put together a budget and you knew your agency was going to get cut by 5%, you would want to put the least important thing at the bottom of the list and the most important thing on the top. If your agency were going to be cut by 10%, you'd want the two least important things. Not that everything isn't important, but when I consider things in a broad sense, and if I were with an agency, I would want to consider if I had to cut something, if I had to cut 1%, this is what I would cut. And so I look at it in the sense that Senator Bonoff said and the sense that Representative Banyan said, as you know, their goals and their mission and everything is included. But I also would look at it as far as, you know, if there's a budget issue as one of the charges here, what would it be that you could maybe live without, and what are the things that you can't live without?
Thank you, Representative Pepin. Ms. Orak.
Madam Chair, I am concerned that we're getting too much of a definition around priority-based budgeting. I think we're going to lead people to certain conclusions based on how we're defining it. And if we have a broad definition, I think part of it would give us some idea of what their strategy and their thoughts are about how they put together the budget, how they put together their mission, you know, what are the strategies and tactics behind the agency and the groups that they're working with. I mean, that's what I've done in my budget. I mean, when I put together a budget, I just assume it's priority-based, that I just don't put together a budget, and you know, everything is according to what the economics are at the time, and whether you're an agency or a business or a major corporation. So I would just caution us about being, you know, having too many constraints around what a priority-based budget is, because I think based on what we had talked about earlier, it was I just think, you know, we're leading them down a path of telling them what we think or how they think they should budget, and I think that we need to do it completely the opposite.
Thank you, Ms. Orak. Good comments. I think one of the things that in the private sector, the economics are how much revenue do you have or if you have any. I think in the government system, it's how much the legislature appropriates or fees that come in or numbers of professionals. So it's a whole variety of things. It's a little, I mean, you're exactly saying that very thing, almost like Representative Pepin did, in that sense of the depending upon the economics of it. Well, in the legislature, it's the economics are in the legislative world. This is how much money you have and doing all of that. But I think that there's validity to seeing giving them flexibility and letting them kind of determine that. I just think that having a good discussion about it is helpful. And any other? Representative Mann, you're... Ms. Murillo, sorry. Yes.
Madam Chair, yeah, just to echo, it just seems that I'm not sure what the, that maybe instead of being prescriptive about the priority-based budgeting, because in the end, you know, we may see our job as like disagreeing with the priorities that they set up, or that, you know, it seems like the statute tells you to do this and you're spending a little less time on that than we think you should, or something like that. And so I just sort of would prefer to keep it at, see what, you know, just to give us a priority-based budget, see what they say, and then on our analysis of it, you know, we may or may not agree.
Sure. Okay. Representative Banyan, did you?
I wasn't sure if you were asking me a
question. No, I was just going to mention to you, I just realized that I needed to call on Mr. Murillo to make a comment first, but I would just going to mention that you'll put that in writing still.
You bet.
Send it out and all of that.
Did you want me to send to Mr. Hebinger just and have him forward to the committee?
Okay. Yeah, and then he gets.
I would just leave you with one thought. I think we can define a lot about what priority-based budgeting is, and you're thinking about it at an agency level, whereas there's a lot of conversation about priority-based budgeting at a governmental level, as covering an entire government, and it's a different discussion depending on where you where you're doing this. However, in terms of just identifying activities and then looking for performance measures, I would hope we could coalesce around some idea of what that should be, something that they do. The rest of this, I agree, is just one person's prescriptions of this is what I would like measures to look like. But you're welcome to, and I'll say I spent a lot of time thinking about this in my academic life, but this is what you decide you want to do with this is entirely up to you. But I do hope we could get agreement on those two points, both that we should get an activity, we should get a list of activities, what their statutory references are, and then look for performance measures therein.
Any thoughts on that? You want to just leave it open right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you have a motion.
The motion we have on the floor right now is, again, not all of the other comments that were made, but just simply number 13, a priority-based budget.
Right.
At this time, in its simplest structure, this is what we have. All right? Okay. Representative Banyan has made a motion to adopt those.
It's a preliminary over.
As a preliminary set of questions, yep, subsequent to any decision of the Sunset Commission. All right? Good? All right. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and is adopted. Thank you. All right. Mr. Hubinger, is there anything else, or Mr. Shepherd, or staff, or anybody, anything else that we have?
Madam Chair, I think we're good.
Okay. Looks like we are good to go. Thank you very much. And the next meeting will be on December
6th. No, 8th.